Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Unchefed. If you didn't catch our last episode, where we dove deep into the delicious waters of one of my favorite condiments, fish sauce, then make sure you check that out. I want to give a big shout out to Greta from the History of American Food for helping us keep our historical facts squeaky clean. Again, definitely go back and check that out when you get a chance. We had a lot of fun with it. Today, we have Jay from the Fuck My Work Life podcast. We got to thinking about the human element of food, you know, what it means to fall in love with food and what it means to remember and explore your personal history with it, as well as how it connects us to the people around us in our communities. And we had such a good time with it that I want to put the invitation out there in the open for everybody to get in touch with me through our website, unchefed.com. Reach out to me on Twitter, that's at Unchefed, or just send me an email. You can email me directly at Brendan, that's B-R-E-N-D-A-N, at unchefed.com. If you're interested in just coming on the show and exploring your personal history with food with us, reach out. We'd like to start putting some shows together along those lines. But you can also just drop me some food stories and I'll start reading and compiling submissions for future episodes. Again, probably the best way to do that would be to send me an email with the stories. But I think there's an opportunity to have a lot of fun here with this. I hope to hear from you with your stories. Without further ado, let's set the mood for the conversation with Jay. And don't forget to check out his show, Fuck My Work Life, wherever you listen to podcasts. Baby, you think a little too small. I got big goals, baby. Ain't where the money at. Look, I just need the info. Pronto, I go and get it and split it with my kinfolk.
It's time for another serving of Unchefed, a critical and often humorous look at the politics and history of food and agriculture from the perspective of two friends and former chefs. Unchefed. Food Unpacked.
I ain't surprised at all. Seen them rise and fall. Went up the mountain, it wasn't hard to climb at all. At the top, I found some relief. I finally got some peace. Carry on, but please don't mess up the mood. Yeah. I worked too hard for it. No, I need it. Beat it, bro. You mess up the mood. Yeah. Ooh. I work too
trying to draw on a little bit more journalism skills than I possess. So it's a work in progress, but the theme of the episode is going to be learning to fall in love with food again. Like, it's supposed to be almost like a love story of sorts. Yeah. So that's kind of what I want you to have in the back of your head, is that this is a relationship that you have with food.
Well, I have a very good relationship with food.
Have a very healthy, strong relationship with food.
I do.
You have a pretty big background with Cajun food.
Yes. Yeah, I grew up in Louisiana. So growing up, it was a lot of shrimp boils and crawfish boils and gumbo and pasta laya and jambalaya and all that good stuff. So I grew up eating that stuff. Some of it, I think as a kid, some of it, like the gumbo, I was not into, because it's like everything in the kitchen sink is thrown into a soup and it's kind of poured over rice. And as a kid, it's kind of difficult to, you know, your palate's just not into that kind of thing. But now I love it, you know, now I love it. But yeah, I have a pretty extensive background with Cajun food. And it was probably 10 years ago that I got hurt at work, and I was off of work for like 7 months because I had to have surgery. And in that time off of work, it started with just sitting on the couch playing Xbox because I had nothing else to do and I couldn't really do anything else. And then I sold my Xbox to get it out of the house because the day would go by and I wouldn't know where it went, but into this stupid game.
Did you do it and angrily? I started like, get out of my life, Xbox. And then
I actually didn't sell it. I gave it away. I gave it to my girlfriend's parents because I had the Xbox Kinect and she wanted her mom wanted to do like the exercise games on the Xbox Kinect. So I just gave it to her because my girlfriend would leave for work And I'd be sitting on the couch, and it felt like 10 minutes later, she's walking back in from work, and I'm still playing the same game. Like, I did not move. And I started watching a, like, Kitchen Nightmares and, like, the Food Channel. And I was like, you know, like, I'm sitting here. I need to just, like, I'm going to try cooking. You know, I'm going to try my hand at, like, following recipes and learning how to cook. And so I started, you know, cooking small things, you know, like different little casseroles, because they're super easy. You just kind of cook it, throw it in the oven and let it go, smother it in a bunch of cheese and you're good.
Fried onions. Yeah.
You know, so I started with that. And then I started looking up like the old Southern recipes that I hadn't had in a long time. And I started making those and you know, at first it was touch and go, you know, like too much salt or not enough salt or too much of this, or it was way too much like tomato juice.
Tastes dry.
Yeah. And you know, it took a little time, but then I just never stopped since then. And I've always just been cooking. Mm-hmm. You know, I would rather spend the extra time, like go to the grocery store, and instead of going down the middle aisles and grabbing all the pre-made stuff that you just throw in a pan, I would rather get a recipe, get all of the ingredients to know that I'm not adding all sorts of crap into the food and just cooking like the whole food, and I can season it the way I want. Cause growing up in Louisiana, like, we are not English. Like, we like spices. We don't boil chicken. We cover chicken in spices and cook it, you know? And so yeah, I'm big on like big flavor food, and I like to be able to spend the extra time and cook the food the way I want it and have it turn out good. And, you know, and then it turned into cooking for other people, you know, and now it's hard. Like, even when I cook for myself, it's hard to not cook like I'm cooking for 15 people.
I know that struggle. It's easier to cook large amounts, I think. Like, if you're going to get a bowl dirty, then get a big bowl dirty. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And plus, I don't have a problem eating the same thing every day. So I can cook for 15 people.
Yeah. There's a benefit to food like Cajun food, because it actually, like, the flavors marry and kind of deepen as it sits.
Oh yeah. They kind of melt together more. Yeah.
So like the second or third day, sometimes it tastes even better than it did the first day.
Yeah.
It's a cuisine I'm really familiar with. I hated it as a kid too, for the same reason. I think when you're a kid, you have more taste buds, and it's just like, it almost confuses, like, you're more lizard brain when you're a kid, you know?
Yeah. Just give me chicken nuggets.
Yeah. If you have too many things going on your palate, it just kind of like short circuits your little lizard kid brain, you know?
Yeah.
But as an adult, you can appreciate all those individual things. I got to say, gumbo is one of my favorite comfort foods at this point in my life.
I haven't cooked gumbo in a long time, but
do you do the filet or do you do the okra thickened? You know, so they all use like the black roux, but
yeah. No, I don't do okra.
You don't do okra?
No, it's more of like a chicken and sausage gumbo.
I think that's one of the few places I don't like okra for the most part. Like, I'm a chef from the South, and okra is a huge Southern ingredient, I think.
Yeah.
And there are some instances where it's all right, but for the most part, I don't like it.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of it.
For the same reason, it's the sliminess, right? I think that's usually what gets most people. Gumbo is one of the few things that, like, if you stew the okra down with, like, the mirepoix right at the beginning, like, some of that sliminess gets into the flavor base, the vegetables. Mm-hmm. And then when you add your broth, it kind of gives the entire thing this, like, slippery feel. That over the years I've come to like when the slime is just like, when it's pure slime, it's awful. But when the slime, like, kind of melts into the broth of the soup itself, that's like the one time when I like it, like the one time.
Yeah. I've never, and even like, I like gumbo now, but I still have, I don't want to call it PTSD, but I still have like the memories of a kid of being fed gumbo and like, like holding my nose to, you know, yeah. And that's exactly how my house was. Like, you ate what was put in front of you, or you didn't eat. It wasn't like, oh, there's another option. There's no menu. This is the menu. You're going to eat it, or you're just going to go hungry. And so it was like, hold the nose.
Cajun food is notoriously like, yeah, it's a culture that doesn't waste. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, not
they're not
at
okay
all.
With anything going down the drain, going in the trash at all. That's where a lot of the spices come from. It's just like, all right, we're going to make it taste good. And we're going to throw stuff into it to try and make it taste good, because we're not going to throw anything away. Have you seen these like absolute monsters that put like mashed potatoes in their gumbo?
Oh, yeah. People who serve the gumbo over mashed potatoes, or like red beans and rice over like garlic mashed potatoes, that the potatoes are yellow. There's only like a pound of butter in them, you know.
Gearing up for swimsuit season.
I've seen jambalaya where, like, this was growing up, where the jambalaya was cooked, you know, and the rice is in it, and on top of it was fried alligator, like the tail of the alligator. Fried alligator bits was put on top of it. And it was like, there was already crawfish, sausage, chicken, ham in the jambalaya. And you know, it just had to be topped with that fried alligator tail. And it was just like,
I feel like you're bragging at that point when you throw like fried alligator on the top of it.
I feel like, you're just ready to go. Like, I want a coronary and I want it now.
I'll tell you, I love fried alligator though. There's a place in Alabama where I'm from called Tim's Cajun Kitchen. And Tim was, you know, he was an authentic Cajun chef from the right part of the country to be cooking Cajun food. And that was one of his dishes that we'd go and split, like, me and whoever I could talk into going to Tim's Cajun Kitchen with me. We get a big basket, because that's what they do, like the red plastic baskets with like the paper, and they just stuff a bunch of fried alligator tail with remoulade.
Yeah,
and it was awesome.
Fried alligator tail is good. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem with that when I was a kid, because it was fried. You know, it was like, it was breaded and fried. So it's like a different chicken nugget, you know? And so when you're a kid, you're like, okay.
Do you have a recipe that, to your knowledge, you invented?
I would say no. I mean, the short answer is no, but it's not really a long answer. I think it would be hard for a lot of people who are not like professional chefs to say that they've invented a recipe and it's their own. Like, I have like my jambalaya and pastalaya. I have a bunch of recipes that I've basically morphed from other people's recipes and kind of made them my own, added a little more here, or a little less there, a little something different here. But to say that I have a recipe that I've made my own, I'd be lying if I said yes, you know, just because
I feel like that's
it's
a really
always
nice
started
answer. Like, you're trying to give somebody else credit, but I don't think there's such thing as intellectual property. You know, like, if you took like a recipe and followed it 95% and then just like doubled the onions and that's what you changed, I'd say it's still your recipe, you know?
Well, I mean, thinking in that sense, then yes. I mean, I definitely have recipes.
Well, hit me with your best one then. I want to hear
My best one? Like, my best
one
recipe?
That you've changed that you like. If putting on the spot, gun to your head, if you had to make one of the recipes that you've sort of augmented to suit your tastes right now, like, which one would you...
Okay.
I guess a better way to say it is, which one do you crave most frequently of the recipes that you've kind of augmented?
Oh, man. I would have to say the pastalaya. Like, I crave that. I used to make that quite often. Now my cholesterol is a little high, so I gotta tone it down a bit. But sure. But my pastalaya recipe, I mean it basically, I took it from a dude from YouTube, but I changed it quite a bit and made it my own. Like, he just uses like chicken and sausage, you know, like chicken thighs and andouille sausage or smoked sausage.
I love a good andouille.
And I in the pasta lie, I will take like a pork shoulder and chunk it. And then I will take andouille sausage. I'll put chicken thighs in it. And then I also dice ham in it. And, you know, the spices are like his spices were a bit mild. Like he was like one tablespoon in this big, like 10 quart pot of everything. You know,
it
was like one tablespoon of Cajun seasoning, and I basically turn the bottle upside down until there's a nice pile in there because it's all going to cook. You know, it's going to cook for so long that it's not going to overpower anything.
Yeah.
You know, I add a little more celery to it because I like the celery taste.
Do you cook your celery until it's soft, or do you like keeping it a little crunchy?
I cook it until it's soft. I usually like they call it the Holy Trinity. It's the onion, bell pepper, and celery. I usually cook that down. That's one of the first things I cook when making it. I cook that down to where it's almost unrecognizable. And then I also, like they have the Holy Trinity, I also pretty much always add green onion to it also.
Oh, yeah. That's a good move.
Yeah.
I love green onion.
Just because it puts a little different, but a little more flavor into the vegetables.
And you use a lot of the spice. Is this informed in any way by like how you grew up eating? You know what I mean? Like maybe some people like the tablespoon, but you like bigger flavors.
Yes. And
does that kind of, for you, emotionally connect back to like a previous part in your life, maybe your childhood, maybe your teen years, maybe your early adult years? Is it something that you feel connected to, or is it just delicious?
No, I think it's just my palate. Yeah, I think it's just
your palate.
It's just my palate. It's just the way, like I don't cook bland food, and I'm not a big fan of bland food. So it doesn't really connect me back to my childhood because really, like, my stepmom was the Cajun in my family. And she was the one who would cook all of the gumbos and everything. And thinking back, if she would have spiced her gumbo more, if she would have put more spices in it, I probably would have eaten it.
Really?
You know, I would have had an easier time eating it because it wasn't the spices. It was the taste of the chicken and the taste of the sausage and the taste of the vegetables and the taste of the broth, because that's what you tasted the most.
Right.
And so it was all these different meat flavors and vegetable flavors that I was tasting. If it was like Cajun seasoning that I was tasting, I probably would have eaten it because I loved like the fish fries we would have. And the fish fries are like,
getting back to the fried,
you know,
food.
It's like, the catfish, you know, the catfish would sit in like almost a roux of seasoning. It would sit in there and marinate, and then it would go into, you know, the cornmeal with all the spices in there. And I love that because the flavors just kind of punched you in the face. But it was like, I just remember her gumbo being like, you could taste the raw chicken flavor, you know, not like the chicken wasn't cooked, but just plain chicken, like no spice. And you know, just the different things she would put in the gumbo, you would get the flavor of what she put in it and not the flavor of the seasoning, which some people, that's what they're into. It just wasn't me.
Yeah. There are some people that, you know, they'll talk about wanting the flavor of the chicken. And I think in my career, I've tasted chicken from like a farmer that like raised the birds properly, and I got it. But I think as a kid, the chicken that they were talking about had no appeal to me whatsoever because it didn't really taste good. It didn't taste, you know, as I got older, I started thinking like, I just like dark meat more than light meat. And then I started tasting like a bird that got the chance to like run around and, you know, it would fatten itself up on grubs instead of, you know, whatever feeder meal the industrial chicken farmer is giving to its chicken. And I realized that I could like the ingredient on its own, but I'm with you. When I was a kid, like the ingredients that we were getting weren't good. You know, he didn't want to.
Yeah.
I didn't want to taste that chicken. I wanted to cover it as much spice as possible to try and like hide it. And that was something that appealed to me. To this day, I love spice. Like I'll empty a whole bottle of fucking Tabasco sauce on something. And I won't think twice about it either. You know, yeah. I got a thing of black peppercorns that I did a gig in on Staten Island, and I ordered a bunch of food for an event. And one of the things I got to take home was like I kid you not, like a handle that's like this big, mm-hmm. like this wide with like a handle. It's like a big, you know, bin of black peppercorns.
Oh, wow.
And I've got it to this day, and I'm going through it too. Like it was full, and it's just like me and my family, and we're like halfway through it. And that was like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I'm painting the right image here, but let's just say that's a lot of pepper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of pepper.
So I'm always interested in, I think that people that develop these stronger flavor desires, like, I think that that's seeded somehow. I think that's part of when I say I'm looking for, when did you fall in love with food? How did you fall in love with food? Like, tracing back to, like, what was I thinking as a kid? You didn't think about it. Like, no kid thought of it. I didn't think about it.
Yeah, not as a kid.
I must have been, like, 20 before I even started. And, you know, even at that point, it was for a girl, you know?
Yeah.
Is there something that was made for you as a kid that you still think about to this day? And have you attempted to make it yourself?
I mean, everything that I loved as a kid, I have learned how to make, you know, growing up. You know, like I said, like the jambalaya and pastalaya, which is basic. Pastalaya and jambalaya are very similar.
Yeah, sure.
You know, very similar, just pasta in one and rice in the other. Maybe it's seasoned a little bit different. But the biggest thing that I do know how to make, but it's so difficult where I live to get a hold of to make, is like the crawfish boils. It's so difficult to get crawfish out here in California. And really? When you do, it's insanely expensive. You know, to get like live crawfish to do a crawfish boil, there is a place that you can get them, but it's like $20 a pound, and it's like no thanks, because a pound is going to feed me, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I'm not going to spend $500 on, you know, a couple pounds.
So when you invite all the neighbors and get them all to pitch in a little bit, So yeah, There's a place called the Gumbo Brothers in New York City. It's on Atlantic Avenue, I believe, in Brooklyn. And every now and then, they will get in crawfish. And you can go in and have like a nice little crawfish boil. And we made it a point when we were still in that area to do that whenever we could. But I would take the shells home and I would make like crawfish bisque out of it. Yeah, which is really nice. But when you think about it, like, shrimp is frequently $19 bucks per pound or more.
Yeah. I've talked to some of my friends out here about like the crawfish boil, and I was like, you know, we could get shrimp and it wouldn't be the same as crawfish, but it would pretty much taste very similar to it. Mm-hmm. You know, because I would tell them about like there's big potatoes in it and chunks of corn in it, and you know, you boil all this stuff and then you throw the crawfish in at the last second, you know, for a couple minutes, and then pull it all out and dump it on a table, and everybody just goes hog wild on it, and it's so good and it's so spicy, you know,
and it's fun.
You know, yeah, and it's fun, and everybody's nose is running and,
you know? You got like the big bibs and like everybody's messy, and it's like, It's a fun experience. I've had a lot of conversations about how food isn't just how it tastes. It's also like how it eats. Like sometimes it's just fun to eat certain. I think to this day, that's why I think that people like mussels is because you can use like the little shells, these little tongs to like pull more mussels out and then eat them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's like this whole like engagement that you have with the dish that makes it more fun to eat, you know?
Yeah.
I made a, you'll love this. When I was a chef at Jeffrey's Grocery in New York City, I put a special on crawfish and grits instead of shrimp and grits. And it killed. Like it did well.
I bet.
It was a lot of fun to like put crawfish on the menu too, because a lot of people were like, ooh, this is so crazy. It's so foreign. It's so different. But, you know, where we're from, it's not really all that rare at all. It's kind of, I think in some places, it's actually kind of considered a pest. Like crawfish will get into waterways and kind of fuck up the waterways. They're like, you know, an invasive species in some places, which is interesting because they're delicious.
they're so good.
Weird that you can have something that's like, we've got too much of this. It's like, yeah, but it tastes good. Just go, you
know, like, just keep eating it.
Just out of curiosity, do you at this point feel comfortable in your knowledge of where what you eat comes from? Like you're saying, being in California, you know, you can't exactly get crawfish, but you still want to cook Cajun food.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable in where my food comes from, like the knowledge of where it comes from. You know, I think this may sound kind of pessimistic, but I think nowadays with how industrialized everything has become, it's either going to be a pain in the ass to find the ingredients that you want to cook with, or you're just going to buy the shit that's at the store, you know, and cook with it. And, you know, like I've been eating a lot of fish lately, and I don't eat tilapia. I try not to get like Atlantic raised salmon. Like I try to get the Norwegian because I think that even though it's farm raised, it's a little cleaner, you know, than the stuff that's farm raised here.
Yeah.
You know, like I have a few fillets of cod that I'm going to cook today, you know, and I mean, I got them from Costco. Like, do I know exactly where they came from? No, but you know, like I'm not going to go crazy in that aspect of it because that's a rabbit hole I just don't want to go down.
Yeah.
You know, like I try not to buy really, really crappy foods, but there's only so much I can do without wanting to pull my hair out to source something that I know exactly how it was raised and where it came from. And it's just like, I just I'm not going to put that much effort into it. I'm just going to eat it, you know?
Yeah. I showed my wife, Ashley, these questions and she thought, when she saw that this was one of the questions that I was going to ask, that it was something that might make people feel kind of on the spot, like on the hot seat, like maybe they're not doing enough. And I get that based off my brand and trying to educate, but like when I envisioned it and I put this question into this series of questions, it was really more like, again, trying to figure out how you fall in love with food. And I realized that one of the biggest impediments to falling in love with food is the fact that we all know that ethics and distribution of food are not synchronized at all, but we don't really have any control over the fact that they're not like synchronized. So it's difficult for us to pay attention to the problems with industrial farming and still be in love with our food, but it's also difficult for us to ignore the problems and still be in love with our food, which, you know, that's...
Yeah, and I think, like, I can understand how that question would kind of put people on the hot seat, maybe make them feel like they're not doing enough. But, you know, that's why the question should be asked, is because, like, for me, I'm going to give my honest answer and I'm not going to pull my hair out trying to find locally sourced good, you know, food that I know how it's raised. I would like to, but it's not in the cards for me. This question does make me think about it, but it's not going to make me change the way I go about getting my food and cooking my food, you know, like, but maybe someone, it will, maybe someone will have the time or have the gumption to want to make that change. You know, me? No, I don't. Like, I don't feel bad. Like,
I'm kind of hoping in the long term that, because I don't think that it should. I think that if you get to the point where you hate your food, then you're going to care even less than you already do. And like you said, if you have to navigate a system that you don't really have any impact on, that doesn't really give you any good choices, and you just have to start ripping your hair out, you're going to hate the process of food, and you know your choices are going to become even less like driven than they already are.
And your love for cooking the food and eating the food is also going to diminish too.
Yeah, you're not going to form good memories around the creation of it. And I think that ultimately, if I can show that enough people like this. I don't want people to change who they are. I don't even really want them to have to really get into the nitty gritty of their choices in any way. But I do hope that through this show and my production of this show, it starts showing that there's a real market out there for people that, you know, desire these things. They just don't have access to it, and that frustrates them. So if I talk to you and you're like, you know, I don't have the time to focus on this, but if it was available, then that would be the thing that I chose.
Exactly.
And then I talk to 100 people behind you that say the same thing. Somebody's going to be listening, and then they're going to make that option hopefully more available.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I think
it should
that,
be.
Yeah, I agree. And I think getting back to the whole, what does it take to fall in love with food angle, is that if you are in a position where you're not making a compromise on either end of like what you want and the ethics of its production, if you're not making a compromise anywhere, then wouldn't it just be that much easier to fall in love with the process and the thing that you're creating, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
It's a little inside look. That's kind of like a big, long-term, highfalutin goal of the show.
Yeah, but still, it's a goal, you know, and it's not, it's like you say highfalutin, but it's a good goal. Like if this podcast could spark someone's attention that is in a position to make those things more available, that would be, you know, that would be awesome. You know, it would be awesome, because if I knew that there was a place that I could go where I knew how the animals were treated and how the production, you know, the ethics of the production, I would definitely go there. And I'm sure around here there are. And you also have to look at those people. They also skyrocket their prices because of the ethics of it. And it's like, okay, well, I don't want to pay.
And because they have to compete. They have to compete with the people that have a higher profit margin that have the worst practices. It's definitely a heavy conversation, but getting back to the loving aspect of it, you know, that's I think to me that's always been a question, is how to have this conversation. And it was telling that my wife thought that it was a question that would put people on the hot seat, because it's not an easy conversation, and you know, getting to the point where it's something that you can actually enjoy. Say like, I'm happy because I do have options, and you know, those options are things that are ultimately yielding me something that I think is delicious, you know. And then you don't have to think like, okay, well, I got to drive, you know, 20 minutes out of the way and spend an extra $50 on a product, you know, because that time and that money have like a material consequence, you know, like they'll stress you out. Like it's stressing you the fuck out. And if you're not stressed out and you get to sit down with these ingredients, be like, you know, I'm going to make something new. I'm going to play around with it. You know, maybe it's going to be the best thing ever. Maybe it's crappy, but I'm going to fall in love with the process of making it to begin with.
Yeah.
Which, going back to your story about the Xbox, like one day you just started getting in the kitchen. You're like, this is kind of fun. You just started experimenting and playing around with it.
It was a lot of fun, yeah.
I don't think that everybody has that experience at any point.
No.
I think it's harder to have that experience when you're starting off with a sacrifice, either an ethical sacrifice or a time sacrifice or a monetary sacrifice. It's a lot more difficult to have fun with the process. you know?
Yeah. So. Well, you know, I think a lot of people, when it comes to getting in the kitchen, I think they're very intimidated by it. You know, they're very intimidated because they don't want to make bad food. And it's like, well, you know,
I gotta eat it.
that's kind of the thing, you know, like I started cooking and then I would make stuff for potlucks at work and, mm-hmm. and the food that I would make and bring to work for potlucks was always the first thing that was gone. And it was the thing that people started looking forward to was like, what is Jason going to bring to the potluck? Because I wouldn't like, you know, a lot of people, they would just go buy a $3 bin of muffins, you know, mm-hmm. little plastic dish of muffins and bring it. And I would go and I would make jambalaya and I would make pastalaya and I'd make like my shrimp fettuccine. And you know, I'd make all these huge dishes and bring it to work in this huge crock pot and it would feed so many people and everyone would love it. And they'd be like, man, can I get that recipe? And I'd be like, okay. And I'd give them the recipe and they'd look at it and they'd go, no, thanks. Because it was yeah. like, you know, 2 bell peppers, 2 yellow onions, 6 sticks of celery, do this, do this, do that, tablespoon of this, do that. And they were so intimidated because I would type out the recipe or I'd print out the recipe and it was like 2 full pages. You know, the first page is the recipe, the ingredients, and the second page mm-hmm. is, you know, the instructions. And they're just like, I guess I'll wait till next potluck. You know, for you to make it because I don't think I'm going to make this. And it's like
that puts you in high demand.
Yeah. Well, those people, they don't understand that, like, you know, if you have a love of food and you want to get in the kitchen, like you're going to make shitty food. That's just the way it's going to go. And you can either stomach it or throw it in the trash. But if you stomach it, you're going to know where you went wrong because you're going to taste mm-hmm. what you did wrong. You know, too much. I mean, too much salt, too much of this. I made stuffing once and and I put celery. I usually put celery seed in my stuffing and I put celery salt in it.
Oh,
and it
man, was that's horrible. That's rough.
It was horrible. And I knew as soon as I put the first bite in my mouth, I was like, oh,
like something's wrong.
Yeah, that was celery salt. Yeah. A deer salt lick.
I was laughing because, you know, again, I keep coming back to this concept of love, but it's almost like dating where you have to learn that, like, there are certain mm-hmm. red flags that you got to look out for.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
this casserole has one too many cats in their house, you know? I have a friend who accidentally, you know, creme brulee is how you put the sugar on top and you caramelize mm-hmm. the sugar. Did that with salt.
Oh.
On accident. How'd
that go?
It's like, so I wasn't there because, like, in my head, I'm like, that sounds like the dumbest shit ever because, like, it doesn't caramelize. But he acknowledges, like, he tried torching it. He's like, it wasn't caramelizing. And I just, like, the chef was yelling at me. So I sent it out and it got to the chef. It never made it out to a customer. And the chef was like, there's something wrong with this. So he, like, tries taking a bite and immediately was like,
fucking salt.
And my friend got yelled at, and I guess he just walked away with a scolding and a story. This is another thing that I'm really, really interested in. I guess it kind of plays well with the idea of learning from your mistakes and, you know, not eating things that you don't want to eat. Do you have any major food aversions, and why do you think you have that aversion?
I think for me, like, food aversions, I will try anything. You know, I'll try anything. So my food aversions, like the list of foods that I'm not going to eat is very low. You know, even like we were talking about okra earlier, like I've never been a fan of okra, but if you cut it up and fry it, I'll fucking eat it quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll eat it quick mm-hmm. and I'll like it too, you know, but I can't, like, I looked at this question. And I was trying to think, like, I don't really have anything that I would not, like, would have an aversion to. Like, I would pretty much eat anything unless I knew that, like, it was cooked in a suspect kitchen or,
right,
you know, like there were clear health code violations by the people who were making it for me, that would be a food aversion. But, you know, it's like we were talking, like I grew up in the South and you ate what was put in front of you. And if you didn't eat it, then you went hungry until the next meal, you know, and it's like, I think a lot of people nowadays, I talk to people my age, friends that are my age, and they're like, I don't eat that. And I'm like, you needed to grow up poor, buddy, because when you grow up poor, there's no such thing as, I don't like that. Uh-huh. It's you put it in your face. It's food. Like, you know, if you're not eating it for the love of the flavor, you're eating it to sustain yourself until the next meal. And there is no, I don't like that. I don't want to eat it. You know, and it's like, I don't have any of those.
It sounds like you've talked to some people that do have food aversions. Is there?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think there are more common food aversions? Like, what's one of the big ones that you hear people say they wouldn't eat?
Oh, man. I mean, I think a lot of people don't eat fish because they don't like the fishy smell or the fishy taste. You know, they'll eat shrimp, but, you know, shrimp is typically cooked in a vat of butter. So how could you not like it? You know, and you know, like I have a friend who despises mushrooms and it's, you know, that's,
I was going to say mushroom seems like a big one for
that's,
me.
That's his,
that I hear.
That's his thing. Like he doesn't like mushrooms and it's like, I mean, I get it. If you're just picking one off the ground and throwing it in your face, it's not that good. But you know, like, you know, my, you spoke to my wife, she's vegan and I made her, she was not feeling good a while back and I made her a chicken noodle soup and in place of the chicken, I used mushrooms and I just kind of sauteed the mushrooms and then, you know, put them in at the end and it kind of took the place of the chicken and it turned out really, really good. Everything else was the same except for veggie broth other than chicken broth. And then, you know, instead of chicken, it was mushrooms, you know, like I think if you're going to be narrow-minded about foods, a lot of people can find a lot of foods that they don't want to eat, but maybe they just haven't tried to cook them a different way to suit their palate a little better, you know, because there's, you know, it's not like, like today, I'm going to smoke the cod that I have in the fridge, and that's not done very often. You know, it is done. I've seen recipes for it, but it's not done very often. You know, it's usually battered and fried, you know, fish tacos and, you know, that's fish and chips is
chowder.
It's usually battered and fried. And yeah, and I'm going to smoke it, and it's going to go into my salads this week for my lunch. It's basically going to be a smoked cod salad.
Oh, that's great. I love smoked whitefish whitefish salad is one of my,
it's going to be good. You know, I'm going to spice the hell out of it and put it on the smoker and let it go for a couple hours and it'll turn out really good. And it's a different way of cooking that fish, you know, and I'm sure there would be a lot of people who'd be like, I don't like cod. You know, and it's like, well, you know,
they're out there.
Yeah.
So I think it's weird because I feel cod is one of the least offensive fish out there, which is why I think it got so popular, is because it's just like you could do so many things with it. It's like it's the generic.
It's kind of like tilapia.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
So I wanted to say one of the things that I've been thinking about with food aversions is when people say that they don't like something. Like the two examples that you gave of people, and this is consistent with what I've seen, not liking things, is they say they don't like fish or they say they don't like mushrooms. And I'm really interested in this perception of food and how it is that we're thinking about it. Because it's really easy to say like, okay, you don't like fish, which fish? Or
exactly,
you don't like mushrooms, well, which mushroom don't you like? And then as soon as you go through that like thinking, that thought process where you're like, because there are some mushrooms I don't really care that much for. I'm not the biggest fan of those little cremini mushrooms and portobellos. Like I don't dislike them. I'll eat them, but they're not my favorite. But you give me a good shiitake or a maitake mushroom, that's like you're getting into the like some of my favorite foods right there. I love those. And fish, there are some fish that I don't like. I'm not huge on anchovies and sardines and the really oily fishes. I want to be because I recognize there's a huge health benefit to them and I'll eat them, but they're not my favorite. But then you get into, you know, like a good salmon belly, or which isn't the most sustainable fish, but, you know, I absolutely love that. And the point is that when you stop viewing it as like fish, I don't like all fish, and you start thinking of them as like more specific, like there are specific categories, you know, like even something as generic as a tomato, there's like hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of tomatoes or apples or oranges. And we have a tendency to think like when we see apple, we have like an image in our head and that's apple and everything's apple, you know?
Yeah.
We don't think about the difference without a little bit of prodding. We don't, unless there's a little bit of prodding, we don't think about the difference between like a Granny Smith or a Red Delicious or a Fuji or a Honeycrisp or a Jazz Apple or a Macintosh, or even the fact that there's like hundreds of them to begin with. We just want it to be one object.
You just named like three apples I've never heard of.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. We want it to be
Macintosh,
one.
That's a computer, man.
Yeah. Well, why do you think Macintosh became Apple, or MacBook has Apple for a simple?
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing. We want it to be like one image. We want to take a whole huge diverse category and condense it down into one simple thing that we can say yes or no to. And I think that's not what love is. Again, I know I keep driving us back to our theme, but I think love is like being able to acknowledge like all this diversity and all of this opportunity and all of these options. And, you know, you're never like, even you're married, I'm married. I'm sure I'm speaking for both of us when I say we love our partners very much, but you know, there's not 100%, like they're not 100% perfect. And I'm not even sure I'd want them to, I don't even know if I'd want her to be.
No, it'd be boring.
It'd be boring as hell, you know? Yeah. And that's what love is understanding like this complexity, this diversity, and not just saying mushrooms, no. Be like, okay, shiitakes, yes. Maitakes, yes. Portobellos, maybe, you know?
Yeah. And I think on that, I think a lot of the people who dumb different foods down into just one simple yes or no category, I think those people, you know, I don't want to sound judgy, but I would be surprised if a lot of those people knew their way around a kitchen. Like if they knew, you know, how to cook, you know, and had a love for cooking food, you know, because I think if you do, you know, if you have a love for going in the kitchen and cooking food and really like cooking for other people, you learn how to like kind of move around maybe what you don't like because you know other people will like it, and try to mix it up a little bit and make it a little different to where maybe it will fit your palate a little more while still fitting theirs, you know?
I think that that's, I think that's 100% right.
Thank you.
So this episode played out very differently from how I originally planned it. In my head, I wanted to get a lot of people that I talked to and compiled the opinions throughout them and did like this very highfalutin journalistic endeavor trying to find the, you know, the heart of people's food passions and kind of show this widespread of thoughts and opinions and beliefs. And the more I thought about it, the more I talked to Jay, the more I realized that there's something very human that everybody brings to the table in their personal relationship with food, and that would be better serviced by talking to people individually. So, and I'm happy that I did it, because even as I listen back, I can see some of the things that we're building as we were talking. Like, you can almost see a change in the pace with how we're talking. We start out and we're kind of like prodding each other, trying to feel out where the conversation's going, and by the end of it, it's just a much snappier rapport. Like, we're both kind of like really interested in what the other person has to say, and I credit that a lot to just what it means to dive into something as personal. It doesn't have to be food, of course. For the show, we kind of view the avatar as being food, but tying into your personal nostalgia and finding an avatar like food to really discuss who it is that you are and where you come from and what you believe and what you like is something that I'm really interested in. So I had a lot of fun doing this. I want to thank Jay from the Fuck My Work Life podcast. Again, you can find his podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can follow him at his Twitter handle, which is mostly run by Kay, to be fair. If you know, you know. But that's at FMWL Pod. And they're a lot of fun. And I guess I'm just going to close this with one final call to action. Please send us your food stories. We want to know more about you. We want to know more about the community you live in, the people that you've touched through your recipes, or, you know, maybe you're not good with food at all. Something that you wanted to get into and just never really found the time. That's just as much a part of this conversation. We're not looking for mastery here. We're looking for personality. So I hope you give us a ring or whatever it is you do with email. But yeah, that's it for me. See you next week, guys.
Alright everyone, that's this week's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please like and subscribe to us on your platform of choice. We are currently on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please write us a review and let us know what you thought of the episode. Also, reach out and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can check our website out at unchef.com to see projects we're working on and to sign up for our newsletter. We'll see you next week. Out the kitchen, yeah. I could make a hit on whatever you bitchin'. Baby, let me fill up whatever you missing. Oh, you like it up at the top. It's